With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Is there a better time to enjoy a fresh-cooked meal than spring? So many ingredients are at the peak of their growing seasons, and flavors in full bloom at HelloFresh. Enjoy the taste of spring with chef-crafted recipes featuring ripe seasonal ingredients delivered right to your door. And there's no more scouring the grocery store for that one ingredient you need to complete your recipe, something I know a whole lot about. HelloFresh takes away all that hassle by delivering fresh, pre-portioned ingredients so you have exactly what you need, and it helps you cut down on food waste. And HelloFresh cares about quality. That's why their seasonal ingredients are picked at peak ripeness and travel from farm to your home in less than 7 days, so you know that they're fresh. As I've told you on the podcast before, I am not a great cook. My wife, my oldest daughter, they can stare into the fridge, see a couple of ingredients, add some spices, and boom, we have a great meal. Me, I need a plan. HelloFresh gives me that plan. They make it easy, that's so easy that I can cook a great dinner. So if you want to join HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/16BA2023. That's code 1616BA2023 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/16BA2023. And remember, HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. You can join the club today. Get HelloFresh. 2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Goal.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Sheet Podcast. If you're a regular listener, you know by now who's hosting. I'm Josh in North Carolina. He's Jeff in Massachusetts. I am the bear. He is the parrot. Parrot, how are you doing?
Not too bad, man. You know, flying here, flying there. I've been a beach parrot the last couple of days down in the Cape Cod League. So, you know, I've been enjoying that a little bit. Got to see some players for 23, 24, and 25 over the last couple of days. So hopefully a couple of those guys turn out to be studs. Maybe some of them get drafted by my system and make my reports a little bit easier.
You say beach parrots. It's funny. I was looking through old hard drives the other day, and apparently I was at Dunedin at some point at their minor league complex, and I took video of parrots because there were green parrots nesting in the light standards, and I took video of it because that's what I do.
That's funny because I want to move to Dunedin, so I want to be a Dunedin parrot.
And I took video of an osprey who was carrying a giant thing of sticks and moss and whatever back to its nest. So I have osprey video. I've got a green parrot video. I've got, there was another one where I thought I was being Steven Spielberg of, or at least Steven Spielberg, Simpsons reference, of minor league backfield. And there's a guy named Brian Lizardo who was pitching, and there was a lizard right in front of me. So I shoot lizard, shoot Lizardo, lizard, Lizardo, up, down, and that never saw the light of day, I don't think. But it amuses me when I find it on our hard drives. And that's really all that matters. That's the whole point of this, is my amusement. Anyway, we're on the Hot Sheet Podcast because we put out a hot sheet this week, just like we do most every week in season. And this week, it's got some good players on it. I'm going to start with the number two guy, Luis Matos, who is, in BA vernacular, a personal cheese ball. In 21, I went bananas over him because he was crushing it and had gotten good reports coming out of the pandemic at the backfield, instructs, and all that good stuff. And then he backed it up in the Cal League. And last year, things didn't go so well. He was hurt. He didn't perform super well in Eugene. And it kind of was between approaches, if I remember correctly. Whereas in the Cal League, you know, some of his stats were masked the fact that he basically swung at anything with stitches and hit all his things with stitches. And then they asked him to be a little more selective, and he went kind of too far and got himself into bad counts and made a lot of bad contact on pitchers' pitches. Well, this year he has come out and has been gangbusters. He crushed it in Richmond and quickly moved up to Sacramento, one step from San Francisco. And this week went, he went beyond bananas. He went plantains. He hit 5 home runs this week, which is incredible because he hit 4 all year prior. And these were not cheapies. If you watch the video that's out there, it's a quick, whippy, just powerful bat, and he tenderized some of these baseballs. There were a couple that snuck over the wall, but they were still hit hard. I mean, one of them I saw went 440, which is pretty darn good to me. I know how far feet are. And yeah, he's a really, really exciting player. He's not striking out a ton. He's walking a fair amount. He looks like he could be in San Francisco at some point this summer. What do you think of Luis Matos there, Parrot?
I think it's he's taken step forwards in terms of the swing decisions. Those have improved tremendously over the last year. You know, we know that he's always had bat to ball skills really in spades. There was never much question that, you know, Matos is going to put the bat on the ball. It's just a matter of, is he swinging at the right pitches and sort of optimizing that? And so far this year he has. I mean, he's running incredibly high contact rates. In terms of like the scores that I put out there for the big three, he's in the 95th percentile for his age in terms of contact, running like an 85-86% contact rate. The swing decisions are fine. He's sort of below that 30% chase rate, which I think for him is big. Just means he's cutting out sort of the bad pitches that I think he was swinging at out of the zone. This is a guy that ran a 35% plus sort of chase rate for a long period of time. And he's hitting the ball harder than he ever has. He's got a near 105 mile per hour, 90th percentile, which impact wise actually puts him in like the 70th percentile for his age, which is pretty good when you consider he's 21 in the upper minors. If this guy is making better swing decisions at the plate, we know about the bat to ball skills, we know about the defensive skills, and he's hitting the ball harder. Yeah, I think this is what a lot of us had anticipated coming into last year, where I think I had him pegged as a potential breakout prospect and a guy that could move into the top 50 to 30 on our top 100. And I think, a year later, we're in a year too early, which happens quite frequently, but I think we're seeing it now. So it's a testament to not giving up on talented players when they struggle. It's not linear. There's a lot of recency bias, I feel like, in the prospect space right now. And a lot of people who treat prospecting and ranking and talking about prospects like the stock market, where, 3 week samples can have monumental swings in rankings. And I just think that's not accurate to what reality is.
As someone who has said many times that I believe my love of prospecting comes from my stockbroker father and stockbroker brother and whatever genetics lie therein, and also my terrible math skills, he took that personally. That hurt, Jeff. But I get what you're saying. I understand. We're talking before the podcast about, bet on tools. And that's sometimes those tools don't show up fully immediately, and they don't translate to big numbers immediately, but you still like to bet on them every time you see them. Look at Leody Taveras. I don't know if he's going to sustain this, but it took a while. And it's not like he's 45 years old right now. I believe he's 25. It just took him a little longer.
Yeah, exactly.
To be what he is, which is a guy who's hitting for pretty good average, a little bit of power, and he can play center field. And that's kind of what his scouting report was coming up. It just took him a little while to get there,
Yeah.
So we'll move down further on the list. You mentioned before the podcast that you wanted to talk about one Jordan Lawler. Speaking of betting on the tools, despite a, not so great baseball card line, despite being in Amarillo, I thought he would hit like 500 in Amarillo, but hasn't turned out that way. Looks like he wound up on the hot sheet this week. Jeff, what do you like about Jordan Lawler?
Yeah, I think, it's funny. I was a little bit lower on Lawler, heading into last season, I think, than maybe some others were. But when we look at Lawler, he's taken a pretty big step forward in terms of his impact. He's hitting the ball harder than he ever has. in his career right now. Still like good plate skills. He rarely chases. He has an excellent chase rate. The bat to ball skills have ticked down a little bit this year, but I think some of that can be expected when you're talking about, you know, a player that is 20 years old in Double A. Regardless of how positive the run environment he's in is, I still think you need to sort of keep some of that in mind. Like, you know, these guys, once again, like it's not linear. We're going to see periods where guys like this struggle for a couple of months to get adjusted to a new level. You know, he wasn't tremendous in his short sample last year, you know, with Double A Amarillo. He hit, what, 212, 299, 353. So I just think that, you know, you have to look at some of these guys. You got to look at what the ability is, the skills, you know, the tools, the true talent, and just, you know, sort of bet on those tools turning into skills and sort of developing. And, you know, he's hit pretty well in Amarillo. He struggled a little bit away from Amarillo. But, you know, over the last 2 weeks, one of which this most recent series was actually in Midland. So it was not a home series for him. But over the last 2 weeks, he's actually hitting 375, 400, 708. He's got three home runs, a triple, and five doubles over that period. Two walks to seven strikeouts. I think last week, you know, if we just look at the numbers that are on the hot sheet, hit 407, 429, 704, had a homer, a triple, three doubles, and one walk to two strikeouts and a couple of steals. So I said it in the hot sheet, but I think that what you saw last week from Lawler was that really balanced skill set, the ability to play shortstop, but also impact the game with power, you know, bat to ball skills. I think the on-base ability, though, was only one walk. He only struck out twice. He was seeing beach balls, but also make a difference in terms of, you know, running on the base path. So there's a variety of skills there. You know, I don't know if there's maybe any 70 tools, but there's a whole lot of 55 plus. So that's a very worthwhile player, one of the top prospects in the game. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he goes on a tear in the second half of the season and the final line ends up being excellent.
I agree with you, Jeff. He's a really good prospect, and sometimes you have to wait. Marco Luciano is that way in Richmond. You know, I've mentioned before how I've cursed a lot of Red Sox prospects this year. Giants hitters aren't doing so great when I watch them. Luciano looked, and I don't know why we're taking a Luciano tangent. He's not on the hot sheet, but he did have a good close this week with three bombs in the last two games, including a granny. I saw him last week for one game, and he could not have looked more out of sync. And then he did not play the next game, and then I left. And then all of a sudden, he went bananas. And yeah. Wade Mechler came back, just like when I went to Eugene, and Wade Mechler was on the IL and came back the day after I left. So if I'm at a Giants affiliate and I leave, expect Wade Mechler to be in the lineup the next day. I don't care if that's San Jose or Eugene. Somehow Wade Mechler will be there after I leave. I don't know if that's an Oregon State, Oregon thing, but it's been pretty uncanny that whenever I leave, that guy gets back in the lineup. Anyhow, back to the hot sheet. You know, we'll move back up the board since we're just going willy-nilly like the Price is Right mountain climber. We'll go to Drew Thorpe at number seven. Yankees pitching overall had just an outstanding week. Everywhere you turned, it was dudes punching out 10, 11, and in Drew Thorpe's case, 12. He had the best start of his career, struck out 12 over seven, five hit, no walk innings, shutout innings. For Hudson Valley, and he and Chase Hampton are both knocking on the door, in my opinion, of Double A Somerset here very shortly. You know, for the midseason update, Hampton's still in the Yankees top 10, and he's, you know, they still would like to see him add more velocity, but he's got enough command of both the slider and that nasty changeup of his to really rack up the swings and misses, especially at high A. And when, if and when he does get to Double A, we will see, you know, how well that those skills translate to the upper levels. But they, like I said, they have not been shy about the fact that they do want him to add velocity, and then they are, I believe, the hardest throwing organization in baseball, along with the Dodgers. They're right there, but their minor league pitchers throw very, very hard. and they like to add velocity as much as possible. Drew Thorpe right now isn't quite there, but he's got, you know, he's in that mold recently where we've seen college strike throwers get them into pro ball, and you try to add velocity onto them without sacrificing control and command and crispness of their other off-speed stuff. Jeff, I believe you've dealt with Mr. Thorpe before. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that, you know, from a pitchability standpoint, Thorpe is interesting. You know, it's not the type of stuff that's really going to sort of jump out at you. You know, and it's funny because I think though he went higher in the drafts, certainly, you know, his teammate Chase Hampton has sort of jumped Thorpe in terms of what, you know, he's capable of, and certainly more the style of pitcher that I'm interested in. But, you know, I will say that, you know, I think the thing with Thorpe is that he is incredibly polished. You know, he's not sort of without any stuff whatsoever, because it is a really, it's actually an excellent changeup, probably one of the better changeups in the minor leagues. The slider is pretty good. He sort of uses it in sort of equal fashion to the fastball. And it's also a pretty good pitch, you know, sort of mid, low to mid 80s. You know, there's not a ton of sweep on it, but it does have some sweep. There is some horizontal. His changeup is really kind of interesting. It's almost like a slower bat. Like it models itself. It's very Bugs Bunny like, where it like models itself after the fastball with a lot more run. It almost looks like a slow two seamer. It's a very unusual pitch, quite frankly, but a good one. And you know, he's seen results with that pitch. It's a pretty deep pitch mix. I mean, I think he mixes the four-seamer, the slider, a changeup. I believe he's got a cut fastball as well, and a curveball. So he can mix it up. You know, definitely a pitchability guy, in my opinion. Does have some hop on the fastball, so it's not too bad. But it's sort of a lower 90s fastball sitting like 91 and 92. So a fine pitcher, more of a back-end starter, I think, in my mind. But that's not a bad player, of course, you know.
It's a big leader. That you just attempted to quantify Bugs Bunny's changeup. You say it's like a Bugs Bunny's changeup in that it has these properties and characteristics. I'm like, I don't know if Bugs Bunny's changeup was that serious.
No, like Bugs Bunny didn't throw like one of these cascading changeups. It was just a slower version of the fastball. Like, that's what when someone says a Bugs Bunny changeup, that's what it means. Like it's like it moves like the fastball. It's just slower, right? So it's coming from a similar spot. It's moving in a similar fashion, similar tilt, but it's just slower. There's a velocity separation versus like a vertical separation, which is like one of those cascading changeups that has, you know, a lot of tumble on it.
I mean, it also goes whoop, 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 whoop on the way to home.
Like, too, yeah, yeah. It also makes that
noise. Screeches noise on the way.
Yeah, it does. It screeches.
I wonder what grip Bugs Bunny used, and you know, did he go to Driveline in the offseason to find the ultimate? And does the lack of you know, all the fingers and thumbs really kind of hurt him? Because did he have to throw a split change? Because he's only got two like digits on his paw.
It makes it easier, man. He's cartoonish, so like his fingers stretch in ways that ours don't. I actually believe that he trained at Acme.
Well, I heard he's got a lot of hop on his fastball.
A ton.
Yeah. On that lovely note, we will take our first and only, I think, ad break right now.
If you know me, you know how much I hate making plans. But something I hate even more is having nothing to do. So enter Game Time. Game Time has made it so easy to look up events happening tonight in my area, and I can buy tickets the easy way. So maybe I'll head to a Nationals game, or I'll go see a concert or a comedy show, whatever. I get access to the best seats and the best deals at the last minute, all while keeping my plans stress-free, just how I like them. I mean, it's the fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. Buy tickets in a matter of seconds. Two taps and you're set. Tickets are sent directly to your phone, so you never have to dig through all of those unread emails. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
And we are back. Now that we've talked about some players in the hot sheet and dissected cartoon changeups, let's talk about what we're doing this week. You know, last week we talked about myself going to Richmond for a couple days to see Jared Jones and Carson Wisenhunt. If you follow Bapper, you saw one of my mega Bappers from Richmond featuring Jared Jones at the lead. And I believe if you look tomorrow on the site, you will see one led by Carson Wisenhunt. I talked to him after his start the first day I was there, and he starts tonight. So if he performs well, he will lead another edition of Mega Bapper. And and we'll have some quotes from him. I thought he was really fascinating, breaking down, you know, why he doesn't have one changeup. He has three. And it was pretty good to talk to him, because watching it, and I'm not spoiling everything here, but watching it, I was like, wait a minute. He's got at least three different shapes on these changeups. Let me see if they're three different grips or whatever. And you know, he told me. So if he performs well, stay tuned. If not, you know, wait till the next time he performs well, and I'll spill all the secrets. But I did that last week, and this week there are more teams around here, so I am actually going to go delve into the amateur world a little later today. The 17U teams tournament, some sort of 17U event, is over in Cary, and I'm going to go take some vidya for Ben Badler and co for their various lists. And there's one team out there that I read it up to Jeff earlier. There's like 20 members of our 2024 top 100 on the team. So I'm just going to set up my cameras and let it roll. But also, when I get out to these professional games, Austin Charles just got promoted to Columbia, and Columbia's in Fayetteville this week. So I'll go see him. And they've got a lot of arms on their team, even with Frank Mazzucato injured. Kannapolis is in down east, and they have Noah Schultz. So I think I will go see them, him at the very least. Durham has Syracuse, and they just got Mike Vassell, and they've also got Ronnie Mauricio if he's healed up. I'm not sure he's going to actually be on the field, but there are, as always, a lot of choices in the area around here. Jeff, what are you going to see?
Well, I really only got two choices, because Worcester and Hartford are out of town. You know, I don't get any of the good International League teams coming through Worcester this year, I swear to God. So they're in Norfolk this week, as opposed to them Norfolk coming here. And then Lehigh Valley is their next team, which I think has like been here three times already. And if you follow the upper minors of the Philly system, not stacked. And I've already seen Double A, which I think is like probably one of their more robust lineups and pitching staffs, with Abel and McGarry and some of the guys out of the bullpen like Baker and Schultz and those guys. So it's sort of two options. I can go see Akron in New Hampshire, which it's Will Dion versus Semra Bursey tonight. I don't know if I can make the game tomorrow night, because it's, I think, my son's last baseball game of the year, and my daughter has a softball game at the same time. So us two parents need to split up and go to one game each. So I got to pick one of those. Not going to be able to do that. I also have Brody Breck going tonight in the Cape Cod League. There's another interesting freshman from Bryant going in Wareham, which is a little bit closer, considering that a little bit as well. So I do have the full Cape Cod League going right now. So I will pretty much have a game that I could potentially go to every night with some prospects. I haven't decided yet where I'm going to go this evening. Sometime during the week, my plan was initially to do Cape earlier in the week, and then over the weekends when it gets busier down the Cape, shoot up to New Hampshire where it's a little bit more low key. So you see some of those Akron hitters, see some of those pitchers. Wanted to see Chad Dallas go as well. But I think he's going tomorrow night, so probably not going to have an opportunity to see him. So still kind of up in the air where I'm going to go, but it's going to be Cape Cod League or New Hampshire, because those are my options, Josh.
Well, and I would like to correct a blatant misstatement on my part. Charlotte is in Durham this week, so I will not be seeing Mike Vassell or Ronnie Mauricio, no matter what they do. So that's Charlotte at Durham, not Syracuse at Durham. Also this week, we're continuing to roll out our updated top 30s. I have the Yankees and Marlins, which are both on the site, and the Guardians, which are also on the site. I just submitted the Pirates. I also have the Giants and the Rangers. Those will continue to go out all week, and we're, you know, getting there. I'm putting the mega draft preview to bed. I believe it's 100 pages. I think I've read, maybe not 100 pages. It's a fairly sizable issue. And I've read probably 30 pages of it so far. I've got some more to read as soon as we're done recording here. Great content, as always, by the draft guys, which is pretty much everyone but me and Matt Eddy, who's contributed scouting reports in some way, shape, form, or fashion. I always like kind of reading reports of the top 100 players from someone who sees almost exclusively pro ball standpoint, and then kind of saying, okay, this player jumps out to me because of this, just based on their report, and this player doesn't sound as good despite all the hype based on their report. And it's just kind of interesting to look at it as a different lens. There is that phenomenon every year where some hyped draft guy will go in the first round and then just will absolutely get brutalized by professional scouting almost instantly. And sometimes it turns out to be right. Jeff, which teams did you do for the top 30s?
So on the AL East, I had most of the division. I had the Orioles, I had the Red Sox, and I had the Blue Jays. I had the Braves in the NL East. For the NL Central, I have the Cardinals. For the AL West, I have the Astros. And for the NL West, I have the Rockies. So already sort of more than halfway through my top 30 updates here for June. I feel like these are some of the bigger updates just simply because it's not draft guys where we have reports and just have to sort of update those slightly, tweak them a little bit. It's more, all right, we haven't done these rankings really since December, November, and we need to sort of move the list around. There's a lot of players that have popped over the last 2 months. And I feel like with some of my systems, particularly the Blue Jays, that sort of like 16 to 30 group is very much in flux, very fluid. So I think there were like 9 players. I think I added on that list, I swear to God. Less on the Red Sox, a few on the Baltimore Orioles, but I feel like they're so deep with prospects that it's just trying to really, the work there is shaking out who the best players are, because there's a lot of talented guys and you kind of get into that middle range. You're like, well, there's a 4 or 5 different ways that I could go with this. You know, you have somebody like Kyle Stowers, who's like 9 at bats away from graduating. And then like the Braves list for me is a little bit tougher because I don't cover the Braves year round. I don't get to see any of their affiliates. So I don't have any firsthand knowledge. I haven't seen, you know, any Braves spring training games. So for me, it was like having to really reach out to some contacts that maybe I don't work as closely with consistently and kind of get feedback there. And the other thing is there's not a lot of separation from like 4 to like 25 in the Braves system. So it's very small margins in terms of trying to shake out, all right, who's the best player, talking to scouts, talking to front office folks, looking at numbers, watching some tape and video, et cetera, and then just trying to figure out, all right, where do these guys shake out? What are tool grades on players that I'm adding, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, it's a whole process. And some of these guys, you know, I have some weaker systems. I have some stronger systems. I don't have any real standout systems. There have been some guys that popped up. We've mentioned Chase Hampton in the Yankees system, Braxton Ashcraft with the Pirates, Victor Mesa Jr. took a big leap in the Marlins system. Guardians, Brayan Rocchio really didn't, you know, jump a huge, but his reports have been really loud. Yeah, and I'm not going to reveal the other two systems just yet. I got to keep a little mystique and aura about it. I've heard those two people show up at playoff games sometimes. But yeah, that's what we're doing this week. And that's pretty much it. Jeff, any final thoughts?
Yeah, sorry. I got an email from my my son's vice president, and she used the term brain break, and that just made my brain break for a second. So sorry, I got sidetracked, Joshua. I called you Joshua. Probably don't like that. Josh is going to get angry at me. He's going to say, cut that out of the podcast.
Yeah, I don't need the ooh-ah at the end of my name.
Ooh-ah! Josh, ooh-ah!
I am the bear. That's what I am. In any case, for the parrot in Massachusetts, I am the bear in North Carolina, saying goodbye and see you next week.